All right, everybody, welcome back to the latest Kente Corner, your favorite casual Hoya basketball podcast. I'm Bobby Bancroft, and we are coming to you the day after Georgetown's home finale. It's over. No more Georgetown home games until November, which may be a relief to some people after the way the season's been going. And I don't even know when the last time we had casual Hoya on here. We got casual Hoya on here. Andrew, what's up, man?
Good times. Once again, happy to join you on this, Bobby. Yeah, man, another riveting season for the Hoyas, but let's get into some of the topics of the day.
Yeah, so, you know, Georgetown loses again last night. Look, they're an underdog. Providence is trying to make the tournament. Not surprising. The loss, not surprising. It was pretty winnable, which is, you know, not always the case for Georgetown games, but, you know, the Xavier game was winnable, this and that. It's not really that, though. And I know you chimed in after the game. The scene at Capital One last night was just really tough, I think, to swallow. Sitting there, it felt like I was in Providence. I know you saw it on TV at the end. You had some thoughts on Capital One Arena as a venue going forward. I mean, they can't just keep doing the same thing, right?
It's the worst home court advantage in the sport. And I don't know if it's even close. The opposing fans always make their presence felt, and that has a lot to do with BC, you know, generally. But to your point, yeah, and Fox Sports picking up on that large contingent of Providence fans who did a good job of being loud and standing and whatnot, and it felt and looked like a Providence home game. And, you know, if Georgetown is going to continue to underperform on the court, and doesn't have a reasonable alternative to Cap One Arena to play their home games in, there are certain things that they can do within the arena to make it a better home court for the Hoyas to play in. Number one that I put out there is to move the students from the student section or sections behind the basket to midcourt. You see this at a lot of schools across the country, and when those games are broadcast on television, it just has the appearance of a more raucous and fun atmosphere. You know, even the games that Georgetown has played in McDonough, you see the students there right at midcourt, right? For these games at Cap One, you don't see the students at all unless you get that shot of the baseline or unless you go to commercial break. And I remember when I was a student at Georgetown back in the 90s, when we used to go to, you know, US Air Arena in Maryland, it was a fun experience because, well, number one, the team was good, right? But all we wanted to do as students, you know, we brought signs, we wanted to get loud, and we tried to get on the Jumbotron, and we tried to, like, get on TV. And no better way for students to do that than to be at midcourt where they're going to be on TV all the time. And some people say, oh, well, what students? Oh, well, how could you fill the... You don't need to fill anything. There are, like, 3 to 4 rows that are constantly on the television camera behind the scorer's table and the benches. It's 3 to 4 rows, the length of Cap One. You're talking about, I don't know, 1,500 seats. I mean, you go all the time. I don't even know what that number might be, but it's not that many. And if you can literally just fill those rows, it's going to make it look so much better on TV. The kids will be jumping up and down. They can do their chants and their, you know, synchronized dances or whatever they do, and it'll just create a better atmosphere for everybody. For the Hoya Hoop Club members who have those seats in the first 3 or 4 rows, well, guess what? They're not showing up anyway. There's nothing that looks worse than having those seats empty, which is what it does now. If you want to placate them, they can move to the other side that is not on the camera. They can put them at midcourt there, or just move them up a few rows. It's not going to make a difference. For the games where the students are not there, the game is over breaks and whatnot, that's when you can fill it with even Hoop Club members or even high school kids to make it a really cool looking environment. And you can, and Hoop Club members who normally would be sitting somewhere else, they would love the opportunity to stand with whatever students are there and jump around. It could just, all it would take is some foresight, some minds coming together. And instead of saying, oh, we can't do this, we can do this. And it's really a really simple and easy thing to do, and I think would make a big difference.
I'm not in the business for making excuses for Georgetown because I feel like I hear a lot of them, but obviously last night students are out of session, but you did bring up the idea of then you plan ahead for this. It's not like you found out students were out of session, you know, 2 weeks ago. You know when the schedule comes out, okay, oh, these are the games we have during spring break. these are the games we have during winter break, and you figure out which high schools you can get to be a part of that. This year, for whatever reason, they didn't have like the Eastern Band come in. Who knows? Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's a reason. But these things, like, it's noticeable. The atmosphere is noticeable. When MLS started, I was a big, big DC United fan, big MLS fan, been all over the country to watch soccer games. New England has a team. They play in Foxborough, where the Patriots play. Obviously, far too big of a venue for the MLS team. But what they would do when I finally went to a game up there is, I don't know if they still do this, but it was smart. They only let people sit on the side that the TV camera was facing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it looked like there was far more people there than there were, because that's the only part that mattered.
Yeah, and if you, I went to a game at Cameron this year, and yeah, it's Duke. So you're like, oh, that's a great home court. It's not that many students that are the whole Cameron only seats like 9,000 people. And the amount, when you watch it on TV, you think like, oh, wow, it's insane. Like, all the students are right there. It's really not that many. I mean, for the Villanova game where we had the gray out, that many students, and apparently that the students did a good job of coming to that game, even though, you know, our season was basically over. That number of students just put at midcourt would really give an appearance of a good home court. And I agree with you. MLS, they did a good job. I remember going to DC United games. It was the same kind of deal. But yeah, I mean, there was also some sort of viral video for a Gonzaga home game where, again, it's only like 3, 4, 5 rows on that side where the camera is, you know, dancing, right? It's just fun, and we can do it.
Is there a part two, or is part two just winning?
Well, obviously, you know, people say, oh, yeah, well, none of this matters, win games. That's fine, but I don't think the program's trajectory has shown that the winning is really coming anytime soon. You can't just snap your finger and start winning all of a sudden. I know that people say, oh, well, next year we're bringing in some guys. And okay, that's great. Everyone's bringing in some guys. All right. So, I mean, I would prefer to make these moves first, at least create some sort of semblance of a home court advantage. And then when the wins come, it'll be even better.
So speaking of the wins, so they wrapped up the home schedule last night. Since they won the Big East tournament, since fans were allowed to come back, if you've gone to all the Georgetown Big East games, and I had until this year, I've missed a couple this year for different reasons. Georgetown's 2-27 at Capital One in the Big East, right? Both of those wins are DePaul.
Brutal.
If you take it back, so COVID, obviously no one could go. It was at McDonough. You go back to the season before, which might be hard to remember. That was the season where Akinjo and, you know, a bunch of dudes left, and then they played okay for a little bit, and then McClung got hurt, and Yurtseven got hurt. Well, anyway, they weren't that good at home that season either. So the last four seasons of Georgetown Big East games at Capital One Arena, they're 5-33. Three of those wins are against DePaul. They took out St. John's once. They took out Creighton. I think for the crowd that keeps saying, if they win, it'll be fine, we've never seen Georgetown have to recover from such a long stretch of just awfulness. And I'm not sure what that's done. I don't think, for example, I don't think Georgetown can all of a sudden next year they start 10-2. Only one of those games is like a decent game. The rest of the games are like Merrimack and Lemoyne or whatever. I don't think that's just going to like, there's going to, a light's going to go on somewhere and people are just going to start showing up. I think that there's been so much damage. It's going to take like sustained winning, I think, to get back to what we remember. And when you're older like us, you know, sometimes I'm like, oh, you know, 2010, that wasn't that long ago. Oh my God, it was 15 years ago, right? Like some of those like amazing atmospheres, Duke and just, you know, all that stuff. And the other thing going against Georgetown, and Cooley kind of mentioned it last night, hey, good for the Providence fans coming. And I actually sort of agree with that, because we've never seen Georgetown in the new Big East be good. Like, even when they were firing on all cylinders, they were filling that arena requires the visiting team to bring fans. Mm-hmm. And the last time Georgetown had sustained success, you had big draws coming in every year. You had, well, I guess now they get Syracuse every other year, but you had Notre Dame, you had Louisville, you had Pitt, you had West Virginia. Forgive me if I'm missing anyone else, but you know, I mean, like they had these big attractions coming in, that they're going to bring their fans. And Georgetown needs the other fans to come, but they need their own fans. And I just think that there's an attitude out there that they got these recruits coming in, they're going to get a little better. I think it's going to take a couple years to get the fan base back, because like I said, the last 4 years you've been able to go to games, they're 5-33 in the league. That's just beyond that. That's only DePaul comes to that level. So I'm concerned about that. I think it's much more than, oh, if they're on the bubble next year, it's going to get rowdy in there. I don't think so.
I don't disagree with anything that you said. I think obviously sustained winning is going to, at minimum, that's what you're going to need in order to get fans back to Cap One. And look, you go to these games all the time. Tell me, is it an easy arena generally to get to? Do you even like it in there? I mean, not that Georgetown doesn't, there's no other option, right? There's no other option for the Hoyas right now than to continue playing there. But
I think the arena, I think the arena is fine.
If you talk about the Syracuse game this year, which was, you know, that's the one of the marquee non-conference home games. It's not the marquee non-conference home game. The atmosphere in there for that game, how was it?
You know, the worst it's ever been, right? I mean, you know how, like, when someone sees your kid for the first time in a while, they're like, wow, you know, Jimmy's really grown. And you're like, I don't know, I see him all the time. Like, because these crowds, because I'm there all the time, these crowds have gotten so bad that we're just sort of used to it now. But it used, like, at the end of JT3, when it started to kind of, like, fall, and you'd look around, you'd be like, that's all the people coming tonight? But now I'm sort of conditioned to it. You're like, yeah, this is what happens. And it's not just Georgetown. I've seen pictures of Maryland who's struggling and thinking, oh my God, like that's on campus and no one's going. So there's probably a lot of factors, but Georgetown is in, I think, a special place of suck because of the arena. And I don't know what the next TV contract's going to be. I hope to God there's no 6:30 home games. A lot of the games are hard to get to. Like I said, I used to be a season ticket holder. I've spent a lot of money on Georgetown basketball in my life. Like, my tickets went way up when they made the Final Four, as they should have. Or I should say my donation level for the same seats I had. I actually took a picture for my seats last night just to kind of reminisce. You know, I just don't know what they can do, how they can fix it. That's why I like hearing stuff. I mean, I think I mentioned the fans behind, the scores table and the benches. But other than that, I don't really know what they can do. And the crowds are just bad, man. Like, every time you think, okay, well, it's this game and it's going to be better. And the students, I think 2 years ago, it was Dartmouth. Like, they showed out great. And then you lose to Dartmouth. And I think the kids are like, you know what? I can watch the game on my phone and see if they're any good again. You know, then this year they lose to Holy Cross and they just can't build up any momentum. I think Ed Cooley, I think if you got him privately and, you know, off the record, I think he'd be like, this is way harder than I thought. Like, I think he's in his mid-50s, and I think he has this, like, you know, he looked up to Big John, and I think in his head, Georgetown was something that it's not anymore, and there's a shit ton of work to do.
Well, and as much as, like, this year was year one and a rebuilding year, right, I think it would have been different now as we're talking if this team showed any signs of improvement as the season went along. Right? Like, at least, we can build on this for next year. Like, program has turned a corner and is at least moving in the right direction. I mean, next year is another rebuild. I mean, how many rebuilds can a program really go through while they're struggling so badly before, I mean, everyone just checks out completely? And, you know, credit to the fans that do show up, right? Credit to you who still goes. I mean, I'm a season ticket holder. I still am. And I live in New Orleans. But, like, you know, for the fans that do show up, you know, hoping, praying that, you know, there'll be some light at the end of the tunnel. I mean, those are really the true heroes. And yet again, I'm still optimistic because I know Sorber's coming in next year and whoever these guys are that at least look good on their high school tape. But man, you know, at some point the team really has to show that they're going to be competitive in Big East games in order for the fans to come back.
Yeah, it's really surprising for Ed because he's been in the league, obviously. Maybe because it's Georgetown and the fact that they didn't fire Patrick after going winless. He knew he just had the entirety of his contract, which, you know, I guess we don't completely know the duration. But I think it's a pretty big miscalculation to go all in on year two when I know he wasn't here the last 2 years, but everybody else was, right? Mm-hmm. And the people that you've lost, I feel like you keep kind of losing people. The bar was so low this year. I think if they had won 5 or 6 Big East games and shown some competency on defense and not have one of the worst defenses in Big East history in the KenPom era, I think that you could sell it as a win. Right now, I think your wins are Brumbaugh's playing better. I think people are, you know, pretty interested in Fielder. But even with reported NIL money, which anyone can just say a number and tweet it, you know, I think that they're going to have to overpay guys to get guys to come here, because the same reason you wouldn't be able to get good players last year is going to be going for this year. Like, why do I want to go to a team that's 4-54 over the last 3 seasons? And you say, well, Ed wasn't part of the first two. Well, he was part of a 2-18 season, and they didn't look competitive on defense at all. So I think it's going to be hard to pull guys. And next year is still going to be the last year where you've got old players in college. Next season will be the last year for, you know, if you were a freshman, the first year of COVID, you can choose to have your fifth year next year. So it's still going to be an old season of college basketball. And, you know, all those things go together. This has just been a really tough season. Like I said, I've been following this team since I was a little kid. I struggle to go. I really, really do, because they're DePaul. And they're DePaul. God bless DePaul fans that have stuck through what they've done, because this 3 years has felt like 3 decades.
I mean, it's crazy on the DePaul thing. You know, the fact that we've beaten DePaul by what, 1 point and 4 points or whatever it was, and then you watch them play like last night against and then you watch them play, you know, last night against St. John's, and the Giants are up like 25 at the end of the first half. You know, it's crazy how the disparity is between everyone else in DePaul and then us in DePaul. Like, we're not that far off from being DePaul, and that is really scary.
Patrick Stevens, who covered most of the games for the Post this year, had a great lead in one of his games. I think it was Marquette, and, you know, said these two teams are in the same conference, but they're not in the same league. I mean, the Big East is a really good league for 9 teams, and then there's these other 2 teams, and we're unfortunately one of them, and we need to stop being one of them. It's hard to get out of this cycle, and I really thought the Cooley hire, not my first choice, but I thought a really good choice, and I expected, if you told me their record was the same, I'd be disappointed a little bit, but I'm just not seeing it on the court. I can't point to one area where, like, they've gotten better at this. I thought that they would just be a different looking product.
Yeah, and that's the scary thing. I mean, I'm sure that Cooley, when he first got to Georgetown, maybe he thought he was bringing Hopkins with him. Maybe he thought he was bringing Carter with him. Who knows, right? Yeah. Who knows any of that stuff? So maybe he was at a disadvantage roster-wise to begin with, and we've got the open scholarships that he didn't use. Fair enough. But you can't then, like he said in his press conference the other day when he said, you know, what are the reasons for the defensive woes? I think you tweeted his comment or whatever, and he said recruiting. Well, that's on you. Like, you're the guy in charge of recruiting, right? You're the guy that chose not to use those upward scholarships. You're the guy looking out and trying to create a roster for, you know, the next few years. So obviously willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. We'll see how next year plays out when he finally has some more of his guys in. But you would have thought that they would have just showed signs of improvement as the season went on, coming together as a defensive unit when chemistry really builds defense, right? So when you have, and it's not like they were hit by an injury bug this year with key players missing extensive numbers of games. You know, that team really should have progressed at minimum defensively throughout the season, and I think they got worse.
They get worse. So, Andrew, obviously the Casual Hoya account has taken a liking to another team in the conference, or at least shown an interest. Is this kind of the worst-case scenario for the people that wanted Patino? The fact that Georgetown's having this season and Patino's having the season that you just assumed he would have wherever he went?
I can't speak for anybody else, but...
Oh, yeah, sure, not, just for you.
But I'm not at all surprised at the success that Patino is having in year one, coming into a very similar situation at St. John's that clearly came into at Georgetown when he's rebuilding an entire roster and whatnot. I mean, St. John's is going to have, assuming they beat Georgetown next weekend or this weekend, they're going to have, what, 11 wins in the conference, which I think is the most they've had in like a decade. And they're probably going to make the NCAA tournament. So is it a worst-case scenario for the Patino haters who say, oh, Cooley was the, you know, better hire and he's going to turn around Georgetown faster than Patino could at St. John's? I think that would point to it. I don't see any other way around it. What are your thoughts?
I think his worst case, and this is why if he didn't go to Georgetown, which obviously Georgetown didn't reach out to an interested party over there, I think it's worst case that I wanted to do this like anywhere else. You know what I mean? Like do it at UNLV, you know, do it at Oregon State. These jobs weren't open, but you know what I mean? Like do what you're doing, not where I have to see it. Because
right.
As someone that went to all the games the last 2 years, I didn't make them all this year. I wanted a quick fix. I wanted games to matter. I wanted to feel like I was part of something that was worth my time. You know what I mean? Like, I think we're okay. I think we're allowed to be selfish. And it was clear that if you got someone like him, like one of the greatest coaches, you'd instantly be good. And I know people come at me and say, oh, it's a flash in the pan. They're gonna suck when he leaves or whatever. I don't care. I don't even know what college basketball is going to look like in 5 years. We got unions. We got NIL. Like, are they going to be employees? Like, is it even going to exist? I don't even know. I just wanted to not have the same season 3 years in a row, like I'm Bill Murray and Groundhog Day. So for me, I'd prefer that he was doing what he's doing at St. John's at a school that I didn't have to see all the time, is what I would say.
Yeah. I mean, look, winning games is the key to college basketball. It sounds silly and sounds basic, but that's really what it comes down to. You got to win games, and winning fixes a lot of things. St. John's is winning games, and then you know they announced that they're building a new practice facility and all that stuff. So that program is, just like we were talking about, clearly on an upward trajectory, right? And so
hey,
we're not
you know
there
what?
Yet. We're not there yet. So how do we get there? You know, maybe next year is our St. John's of this year. I don't know. I don't really have confidence that it will be, but I'm willing to give Cooley the benefit of the doubt.
Well, I think they're going to have to, whatever NIL funds they have, they're going to have to overpay to get a certain level. Like the Nats, I don't know how much you follow the Nats. I know you're a Mets guy, but the first time I knew that they were serious when they had to overpay to get Jason Worth was kind of like the first move that they made, and they eventually became good. And it was after he had gone, but that was like, hey, the Nats mean business. I feel like Georgetown's going to have to, you know, get some guys, right? Like, I get maybe what the strategy was this year. It's all about the future. But I just don't think the Georgetown fan base could take another hit like they took this year and bounce back. It's been a long time since they've mattered. It's been a long time since going to the games felt like a fun event. It's sort of like you're going to the dentist. And I think most of the people that are going, it's just muscle memory at this point. And they're like, they're going to get better. And that's an awesome attitude to have. But it's tough to constantly go and deal with the records. Like I said in my tweets last night, like I said at the beginning of this podcast, I think if they'd been a little bit better, you can build up momentum. I don't see any momentum being built off of this season. And I think it's a lot to ask the freshmen next year, in the last year of a really old college basketball, to be difference makers and make them, you know, have meaningful games in February. That's asking a lot of them. So it's going to be portal. And guess what?
Yeah.
Everyone else is going to be in the portal too. Like, it's not a special situation.
Right. It's not like, and I know Georgetown fans are excited. Oh, we've got NIL money. Look, everyone's got NIL money, right? So, and any big name transfer, everyone's going after him. It's not like Georgetown's going to snap his fingers and suddenly get a bunch of, you know, key guys that aren't going to be looking anywhere else.
It's going to be hard. It's going to be hard to get those guys.
That's just the reality. I mean, I think any improvements for the program this year, though, have been off the court with regard to NIL. You know, I mean, just I think Cooley has done a good job in at least getting fans and donors and whatnot to give to NIL so that the opportunity exists to go after some of these players. You know, whether we get them, who knows? I mean, the on the court product, as we talked about ad nauseum today, has just been the same stale, disappointing, and really just embarrassing product over the past few years.
You know, for the people that have made it this far, the loyal listeners, people maybe they're at the game last night. The reason these podcasts haven't been going a lot recently after we got it going again was because I'm sure what you just listened to wasn't that fun because it's, you know, this is wrong and this is bad and they need to fix this. Do people want to hear that twice a week? I don't want to say it.
Yeah. I mean, look, I do I want to be chatting with you every day like we were during the run to win the Big East tournament, you know?
It was awesome. That was amazing.
That was great. You know, now not great. But it would be easy for us to just turn a blind eye and not talk about the bad things that are impacting the program, but that wouldn't be fair either. So, you know, these things need to be addressed. The off season is basically upon us. I forget when the transfer portal opens, but I think it's like in 12 days or something crazy. So these things need to happen, and they're going to happen fast.
They're going to have to happen fast. And I don't think anyone's on the current team spot as far as like where they're like what they're doing now is, you know, guaranteed. You know, I'm speaking basically of the starters. I feel like there's upgrades available. Like if you're Georgetown, like you have to be open to players at any position. I don't think it's necessarily, well, we've got this and now, you know, we need to fill this hole. Like there's just holes everywhere. There's room for improvement across the board. And that's not saying that there aren't pieces on the team that can contribute and help. But you know what I mean? I when you go 2-17, really it's 0-17 for me. Because DePaul's not part of the league.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, no, just like Georgetown's not really part of the league right now. So I mean, when you have that kind of a season and you haven't been trending up in really any metric, I think everything's available. You're just trying to get the best players. You can't be, you know, it's like sort of like the NFL draft where you say, you know, you should not draft for, you know, need. You gotta, you know, whatever. I think they're wide open.
I mean, and to be honest, I haven't even, you know, done a deep dive into this current roster. But just off the top of my head, I mean, who would be safe? Like, who would you want to bring back? I mean,
I think a core
Epps
of
is good.
Of yeah, you know, Epps, Rowan, Fielder, Styles. Yep. But I don't think necessarily in their current roles is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like, you know, I wouldn't pencil in someone to have the exact same role they had on this team because this team has the record that they have.
Yeah, and also, I mean, you know, a kid like Fielder, who I saw he played like 24 minutes last night, you know, now that he's getting significant run and he's actually showing some pretty good signs that he could develop into a decent college player, he could be a target of a team also, you know, if he wants to go somewhere.
Yes. What? I mean, honestly, look, if I was advising anyone, I would put, I mean, if I were playing, I'd put my name in the portal and see what happens. I mean, that's just the way it is right now. Yeah. Yeah, it would be very disappointing if they were to lose one of the younger guys. Fielder's been battling with injuries all year. I think if Cooley had a better roster, a deeper roster, I think he probably would have tried to get Fielder to redshirt. That's just the way that it went, but he's not been healthy. He didn't play Kenner League. He's not been 100%. He's been coming along. And you could see why, you know, Ed wanted him at Providence. You could see why he's a pretty good recruit. There's a lot there.
Yeah.
The guys I mentioned, you can see the flashes. Supreme Cook has improved in certain areas. I think that at this level, it's hard for him to have to give the amount of minutes at that position, particularly in the Big East with all the good centers. But again, everything's open. Everything's open when you have a season like this. And hopefully Ed's able to reflect and figure out, hey, what did I do wrong? That's one of the things we couldn't get Patrick to ever admit, at least to us in public. You know, we'd say, hey, did you think about last season, what went wrong? He'd be like, I don't have time for that. We're like, oh, great.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Andrew, I've taken up more of your time than I thought. I wanted to get this pot out there because last night was just a yuck moment. I mean, it was a game that they could win. It wasn't really the game. It was more of like the environment of like, oh, my God, like, can this ever get fixed?
It's no problem. My time is very invaluable and my life has very little meaning. So I appreciate any chance to chat with you.
Sound like a Mets fan.
Touché.
All right. He's at Casual Hoya. I'm at Bobby Bancroft. If you listen to Kente Corner, you already found us. If not, subscribe and that'll be great for us. All right, Andrew.
Hoya Saxa.